The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox make a move, shocking everybody in a move that no one really predicted. Funnily enough, as I predicted, they trade for Caleb Durbin from the Milwaukee Brewers, getting not only Caleb Durbin, but a couple other infielders and a comp pick, sending over Kyle Harrison, Shane Drohan, and fan favorite David Hamilton. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr. and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Now, this news broke very suddenly, and sure enough, just as Breslow has been doing up until now, there were like no murmurs about this, no rumors, no nothing. It comes out of nowhere, and Durbin was not a guy that I had on my radar at all. I remember us going through and speculating about all kinds of second and third basemen, and not once did I really take a look at this guy as a potential solution to this infield problem we had. It does seem like, you know, the other two guys, Andrew Monasterio and Anthony Siegler, seems like they're more or less depth pieces, which is good, of course, since infield, we needed depth more than anything there. But Caleb Durbin is the headliner. What was your guys' opinion of this so far? How do you like this being the answer that Breslow went with?
I mean, it doesn't really fill the need for power, which at this point we weren't really expecting to fill that need. Isaac Paredes was probably going to be the best we were going to get, and that's not even that great. The fact that we were able to get rid of David Hamilton is a plus in this whole thing. I think it fits so well with the rest of this offseason because we've made so many peculiar moves in the pathways that we took to get there and the amount of depth that we gave up to accomplish the goals and yet not necessarily fill any need 100%, with the exception of signing Ranger Suarez, which was more of a pivot, even though the Red Sox front office says otherwise. It fits. It's right on brand, but it's frustrating. I think all fans are frustrated because there were so many no-brainer moves out there between free agency and just the trade chips that we had to make deals. And to end up where we're at is... Listen, it's been a rough weekend for Boston fans. Let's just say that.
So look at the total power here that we added. You're going to get about 20 to 25 home runs from our first baseman, Wilson Contreras. Basically offsets what Bregman gave you, what a healthy Bregman would have gave you. Let's frame it that way. So I think we've lost power this winter. Like, we did not address that. We were what, a bottom six or seven team last year, or maybe it was in the second half, don't quote me, but we definitely had a power problem. And I just, this roster is a mess. I feel like I don't trust that Caleb Durbin is going to hit every day. I don't trust that he's going to be in the lineup every day. If we didn't have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, you know, maybe I would put some stock in. He could be an everyday player. But where's Marcelo Meyer going to play? Is he just a utility guy now? Did we just pull the plug on him? Like, I don't understand what's going on here. And I think the reason why I don't understand what's going on is because Craig Breslow himself does not know what's going on. Now, what's his name? Caleb Durbin. We had a reliever named Durbin Feltman, and that's what's messing with me right now.
That was happening to me too.
I'm getting my Durbins mixed up. So I'm like, is Durbin his first name or his last name? you know, he'll improve the defense, and so will Meyer. I mean, Marcelo Meyer is still your best defensive glove, in my opinion, in that infield. And so, like, if defense is important, then what do you even care what Meyer hits? Just put him in there. He's gonna help you. You've got a ton of ground ball pitchers, which we outlined on the last show. You know, you've got Suarez, you got Bayo, and you got Sonny Gray. So, but this team just screams first round exit from the playoffs if they even make it that far. That's what this is. This isn't a dynamic lineup. It's not gonna, we're gonna be a bottom five team in the league. I just, and we're right around the second luxury tax threshold. For what? For what?
Yeah, you know, the roster construction, you raised a lot of good points. The roster construction is very bizarre, and we've been calling that out for months now, really for a year. I mean, this team is just a bit of a curiosity, and it seems like moves are made almost independently of one another rather than all being a cohesive chain of events. Like you mentioned, the $6 million to IKF, that is a very weird move. That seemed like a panic move. It seemed like something, I mean, I wasn't happy with it, certainly. And suddenly, this trade seems to fill the gap significantly better than $6 million to IKF. And, you know, we can sit here and say, well, $6 million for the Red Sox, you know, you can throw that away. But not when we're up against this luxury tax like we are. Every dollar counts, unfortunately, for an ownership who wants to pinch pennies. You know, it's very odd. So I don't know what the plan is with IKF. Durbin, I feel like this is going to be an everyday player. One nice thing about him, even though he, you know, the bat is questionable to some extent, he completely lacks power. The barrel percentage leaves a lot to be desired. He does not strike out, which is great. He doesn't really chase pitches, but strangely enough, he also doesn't walk. So his on base is sort of limited just by that. He's only 25, going to be 26. So, you know, there's a chance that he takes a step forward, and he does play good defense. But at the very least, he is a decent bat, a little over 700 OPS, and not only a little over 700 OPS, but with even splits, you know? So that's something that at least we have going for us, is a guy who isn't going to demand a platoon necessarily. That combined with a good defense, I mean, earlier in the month, I would say, of January, I would say, I had a wish list. And I said, all we need at this point, just get me an everyday player that's going to give you 2 to 3 WAR. And we got him. So I can't really complain too much on that front. The way I put it before on Twitter or X.com is that I don't feel that Durbin transforms the lineup, but he also simultaneously kind of makes the team better. It's strange how that works. Offensively speaking, I'm not super hyped about him. Maybe the wall does well for him. I see some people talk about how he puts the ball in the air pretty well. But then I've heard other people say, well, if you project the number of home runs he would have had in Fenway last year, it actually would have been less than what he wound up with. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. This is not necessarily the wowing answer in the infield that we all wanted, but I would say that if I had to choose between Kyle Harrison and Eugenio Suarez and Caleb Durbin and Ranger Suarez, I am happier with the answer that we got.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Because I would agree with you, I would be happier with that pair as well. But to Terry's point, as far as the power aspect, like, I just saw a stat that's absolutely mind-blowing when you think about it. So Rafael Devers played 73 games for the Red Sox last year, which is about 45%, so less than half the season. He was tied for sixth in home runs for the Red Sox and didn't even play half of the season for the Red Sox. I mean, if you want to talk about a power outage for this franchise, that is beyond alarming. And this offense, I mean, forget about media. It's like, I don't even know if we would make the playoffs. You're right, Terry, at this point. And if we do, there's no way we're getting out of the first round. All right, we couldn't even get out of a a wild card because, yeah, I think our defense is marginally better at this. I shouldn't say marginally. It's definitely better in the infield. As a collective unit, I think it's marginally better because I don't think our outfielders are that much better. It's pretty much the same defense. But our power, I mean, unless some of these kids take a huge jump, in which, I mean, we just highlighted the fact that, like, who knows what happens to Marcelo Meyer. I'd love to say he's definitely going to play every day at third or second where they decide to put him, but, I mean, he might be the new David Hamilton, part of the new platoon dynasty. You're going to need Roman Anthony to hit 30-plus bombs to try and make up some of that difference, and I don't see it.
I put a tweet out, I think it was yesterday. You only have three everyday guys on this roster. Okay, you've got Roman Anthony, Wilson Contreras, who I'm assuming will hit. They'll both be somewhere in the 2 to 4 slots. And you have Trevor Story. And that's it. And I don't think I'm doing it again. Caleb Durbin is I'm just not sold that he's an everyday guy. Maybe he will be. And Breslow did say today he will be. But when Alex Cora is trying to balance that lineup, there will be a point where Marcelo Meyer, they're going to have an optics problem by not utilizing one of the best prospects in all of Major League Baseball. What was he like? 13th or 14th in the MLB top 100 before he debuted, something like that. There's going to be an optics problem with him not being utilized the way that he should be. And we know how Cora is. If he doesn't have everyday guys, it's going to be a platoon dynasty. Everybody, he's going to run it like a T-ball team. Everybody gets to play. Everybody gets to play. And so you're going to have a team that largely does not have defined roles. Here's another thing that I love. Jarren Duran was valued as a 7 WAR player. According to Jeff Pass and Ken Rosenthal, all those heavy hitters, the Red Sox were overvaluing Jarren Duran. Alex Cora was asked today, so what's his role going to be? And Cora's like, I don't know yet. You don't know what your allegedly 7 WAR player is going to be doing. Like, he was so untouchable in trades that you've got no plan for him. Apparently, that's just how ridiculous this organization is right now. Here's another thing that's ridiculous to me. Apparently, the Diamondbacks wanted Marcelo Meyer and then one of Peyton Tolley and Connelly Early. And okay, you know, I could see why that's a steep ask. Marcelo Meyer is the least painful guy for me to give up out of those two. I just value pitching. Cheap elite pitching is what affords you the ability to sign the big bats that you need. And so that's why I value those guys. But if you put Marte on this team, and I didn't love him, and I'm not mourning the fact that we didn't get him because he's got some off the field issues. There were some red flags, I guess, for lack of a better term, but he would have solved the power problem. And then you still could have got Caleb Durbin anyway. So I just don't, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense here. And you know, so you would have had Anthony, Marte, and Contreras in the heart of your order. But you chose to keep Meyer, who doesn't even have a spot now, doesn't even have an everyday spot. It's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that that Marte trade because it really is interesting. I know a lot of people were speculating that Meyer must be part of the asking price. And I mean, that makes sense. And it doesn't entirely make sense to keep him because to me, as much as I do love the idea of the player Meyer could be, I think that's the camp everyone has been in for years. I mean, this dude's value is being limited by three things right now. And that is his health, his platoon status, I guess, where he's only going to be batting versus righties, not against lefties. For sure this year it's going to be him and Romy as a tag team. And then also the fact that he is not being allowed to play at his natural position of shortstop, which would elevate this defense instantly over having Trevor Story there. It really is frustrating that we have this guy who we are claiming to be a generational talent, akin to Roman Anthony, you know, the dynamic duo, both of them cut from the same cloth. And instead, while we're challenging Roman Anthony pretty regularly, swapping him from left field to right field to DH, having him bat versus both hands, with Meyer, unfortunately, we are handicapping him a bit and handcuffing him in multiple ways. And it's just, it is a shame because I want to see this guy take a big step forward. But as it stands, we aren't going to let him have the impact that he maybe could have for the Red Sox. And maybe it would make more sense to include him in a package where maybe another team would be able to use him for 600 plate appearances, assuming he was healthy for them. You know, before I hand the mic over to you guys once more, I would like to address the power outage too. We heard some quotes come out just about how they're hoping that so many guys take steps forward, right? They're counting on the young guys to take steps forward. And that is such a frustrating philosophy for an organization to have. And right now we are poised from a power position because you guys are absolutely right. This wasn't even a power hitting team last year, and it's less of a power hitting team this year. And we are counting on so many things to go right that there's pretty much a guarantee that one of them goes wrong, right? We're counting on Abreu to take a step forward, Anthony to take a step forward, Rafaela to take a step forward, Meyer to take a step forward. We're counting on Masataka Yoshida to really make up for the fact that he's going to be depriving guys like Jarren Duran and Roman Anthony at bats. We need a lot to go right for this team. And now when you add Durbin, as much as I do like this player, you know, we're counting on a lot of guys to take steps forward, and there's just no chance that all of them do so.
And, you know, if Anthony goes down with another injury, I'm not saying he will, and I don't think he will, but that's a season ender for your playoff hopes. There's nobody else to step in there. And another thing, too, that I hit on last episode, it's adorable that they're saying Willy Abreu is going to be an everyday guy. I give it till about May 15th, and he'll be back to platoons. It'll be, nope, scheduled day off, nope, scheduled day off, coincidentally when a lefty's starting. And then they'll be like, well, we need to get Duran in there more and this guy and that guy. So I just don't see how that's going to work. And there were times last year, I think he got hurt a little bit. He didn't miss a ton of time, but I forget what it was, a hamstring or something. But, you know, he goes quiet even versus righties at times. Like, he's a streaky guy. So I just don't see how it's going to work.
You know, what's crazy is just a little bit of math here. What if I told you for about $4.75 million more this year, you could have had Ketel Marte, Pete Alonso, and Ranger Suarez? Then what we've done, essentially bringing in Oviedo, Sonny Gray, Durbin, and Wilson Contreras. I mean, when you really think about that, that is absolutely insane. You would have fixed your power. You would have brought in your number two pitcher. You don't need Oviedo because you still have all your prospects that pretty much probably are going to do the same thing on the back end of the rotation. You don't have Sonny Gray taking up a roster spot to basically take away starts from Bayo in the three. This team just makes no absolute sense. And you have Ketel Marte. You still have Marcelo Mario. And even if you got rid of him, who cares? I mean, this team just doesn't know what it's doing. Everything is so reactionary. It's like you said it perfectly, Nick, like every move seems very solitary, but yet it's a chain reaction from the previous mistake that we just made. And then a result of just completely misreading the market, whether it be free agency and then even the trade market. Like, We came into this offseason, priority was get a power bat, didn't accomplish it. Get a number two, it was the fifth thing we did. And trade Jaren Duran, still have him. We did one thing, it was like half right, and it was the fifth thing we did.
Well, let's take a look at this moron. I'm assuming this guy's seen all four world championship teams. Okay, which of those championship teams does this current one closestly resemble? Because to me, it resembles 2023, for instance. Just go back to that year. Maybe it was 2022. We missed both times. But we missed the postseason with J.D. Martinez, Christian Vasquez, who wasn't quite washed yet. You still had Xander Bogaerts. I know I'm missing one or two players in there, but you had really good everyday players, and you missed the playoffs. So I just, this roster is trash, and anybody who believes that this is going to take us to the promised land, that we're going to compete with the Dodgers, and quite frankly, even the Orioles and the Blue Jays, you're out of your mind. It's just this roster. How many times, I mean, the Brewers and the Braves each have had one or two boppers, just like we have, and then just a bunch of utility guys, and they're out in the first round every year, just like we will be.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to this roster, it's very interesting because I saw someone describe this as like a win-now rotation, and I think that that's fairly accurate. I mean, this is a big boy pitching staff that we've been able to put together, and the Ranger Suarez deal was really, like you said, the fifth thing we did, funnily enough, was probably the biggest move we made impact-wise. You know, finally got that number two, made this potentially an extremely dangerous rotation, unbelievable depth. Hopefully the bullpen will come back even half as good as it was last year. You know, guys like Chapman, Whitlock, hopefully a guy like Slayton can take a step forward, stay healthy. But this offense does leave a lot to be desired because, as you point out, it seems like ever since 2018, we've been taking slow steps back. And then 2021, we made that last little charge. But I agree, the offense has been getting worse every single year. I'm not sure if that's objectively true by the actual numbers, the measurements, but it does just kind of feel less ominous, you know, to go up against as an opposing pitching staff. We don't have a ton of danger past the top four, I would say. You get past the cleanup guy, whoever that's going to be. Maybe it's going to be Abreu, you know, versus righties at the very least. But, you know, you have Roman Anthony, you have Jaren Duran, you have Abreu, and then, you know, I guess you're hoping Narvaez, Story, Rafaela, you're hoping Durbin now, you're hoping that these guys show up and deliver, you know, and it just, we're going to need surprises. You know, it's like I said, you need guys to take steps forward, but when you're counting on five guys to take steps forward, you're kind of setting yourself up for disappointment, I feel.
Another guy we were in on apparently was Zach Neto with the
Angels,
LA Angels. Yeah, he was their shortstop. Put up a, I don't have his numbers up, but last I checked, he had a pretty decent 2025. Maybe that's your one for one with a Jaren Duran type guy.
It's interesting how as soon as this trade broke, it almost became every move we didn't make or almost make was like bigger news 10 minutes later. Like, you're like, oh, we were in on Isaac Paredes, but they wanted this. Oh, Ketel Marte, but it would have cost us Meyer. Oh, Nito, but it would have cost us this. It's like, and? Okay. Like, that's what I would expect these teams to ask for. And it's just, it's this perpetual, completely overvaluing talent that you don't even value. That's the ironic part, Terry, is we're sitting here. There's no way I'm parting with Marcelo Meyer. I don't know where I'm going to play him, but there's no way I'm giving him up. And this was a guy that 3 years ago was the number one prospect in baseball. gets hurt, drops out of the top five, was top eight, I think you said, before he debuted. And we just don't even know what to do with him at this point. And you're not even going to put him at shortstop. Like, if you're not going to play the guy at shortstop that literally 90% of MLB baseball teams would play him at shortstop, like, what the hell are we doing? Like, you cut your losses and get something for him while you still have some sort of value to him. But you know what's going to happen. He's going to play defensively pretty decent wherever we put him, whether it's second base, third base. He's going to probably not hit for crap. And at some point, there's going to be a logjam, and we're going to give him away for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, I sure hope not. You know, it's funny how hindsight's always 20/20, of course. But you go back to that Crochet trade, and I would have been furious without question if Marcelo Meyer was included in that at the time, at the very least. I would have been, you know, very upset that we had to part with that talent, right? But it would be interesting to poll Red Sox Nation right now, actually, and say, who would you rather have on the roster, Marcelo Meyer or Kyle Teal? Kyle Teal, there's a pretty clear spot for him. You know, as much as I do like Narvaez, you can never have too many good catchers. You know, you get two hard hitting catchers, and that can have some real impact. When it comes to Meyer, like I said, man, you're handcuffing this kid. You don't want to give him the starting role over Trevor Story, who's the veteran. I'm not sure if the platoon status has something to do with that. Maybe you don't want Story to bounce between second and short. But because of that, you're bouncing Meyer around second base, third base, maybe shortstop on a day off. And instead, you know, you're just limiting the guy's value. And it is a shame. It is a shame because I'm afraid that we're not going to allow him to take that step forward in his game, that we're almost sabotaging him a little bit. Because at a certain point, you can overcook a prospect. You know, if you give him too much time off, if you give him too many easy days, or not enough plate appearances at all versus lefties, you know, a guy's not going to get better. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this year pans out, because not only do we have, of course, IKF now, Romy has been good enough to be the default starting starting second baseman in the top of the lineup versus lefties. You know, so you've got to put him somewhere. It's probably not going to be over Durbin, unless you put him over Durbin half the days, put him over Meyer half the days. But then you could argue that Durbin's a better hitter versus lefties than Meyer, and so you're sacrificing the present for the future. It's just a bit of a mess. And then just to glance at these other two infielders that we got, Andrew Monasterio, he's a bit older, actually. I think he's 28 years old. From what I've seen, he's a pretty decent defensive utility man, second and third base. And he is probably like our backup plan if Romy were to go out, because he's put up some pretty good numbers overall versus lefties. A 107 WRC plus versus lefties last year, as opposed to a 79 versus righties. So very much a platoon type of guy that this team is fond of. Anthony Siegler is an interesting one. He's only, I think, 26, maybe going on 27. And he ended up splitting some time, mostly in AAA last year, with an on-base over 400. And a few games in the majors, ultimately in 380 plate appearances between those two levels, the majors and AAA. He slashed 267, 391, 424. And if you look at Prospect Savant, at least compared to other AAA guys, he was in a higher percentile for most of those stats. So, you know, we got really good depth again at the infield. Like, we did solve that. And I don't hate saying goodbye to Kyle Harrison, even though him and Priester will probably share a Cy Young next year for the Brewers, knowing our luck. Shane Drohan is one, like, you know, you can do with or without. I don't think he really had a role in our team, even though I did like him. And David Hamilton was kind of like addition by subtraction. So it's just kind of a weird trade to evaluate, because overall on paper, I do think it was a good trade, but the Red Sox still have those holes in the lineup that have not really been addressed primarily. And we can say it over and over again. I don't think you could beat the horse enough, honestly. Where are the home runs going to come from? Because I don't believe in the home run or bust philosophy. I love a little bit of small ball. This guy is fast. He can steal bags. I like bat to ball skills, but I mean, you've got to have thump in the modern day. Home runs are king for a reason. home run or bust, not necessarily, but you can't just not hit bombs. That needs to be an option throughout the lineup. That's what the teams that have had the most success for the last several years will continue to have the most success doing.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that point with the prospect as far as being depth for even a Romy, because all of a sudden now we found out today that Romy Gonzalez hurt his shoulder late last year, and it's been nagging him all offseason. So it looks like he may not, or we, I should say the front office, knew he wasn't going to be playing a heavy role in the platoon dynasty in the beginning of the season, which maybe just adds, you know, further credence to this move as far as with the trade and the prospects. But, you know, a name that we really haven't talked about as far as assuming a lot of the pressure now for power is Abreu. And there's another thing that got reported today with the whole Paredes thing, is that it seemed like Abreu was basically the ask, which is hilarious since we got him from the Houston Astros in that Christian Vasquez trade. And, you know, talk about putting a tremendous amount of pressure on a guy that you literally were scared to play and basically was part of your platoon dynasty in the outfield. And then also talk about like the lack of confidence that you must have in a guy like Christian Campbell, because if they were asking for Vasquez and you really thought that Paredes could really bolster and add a little bit more power than Durbin to this infield, and you were reluctant to give away a guy that you basically won't bat against half the pitchers in the MLB, you're basically saying that you don't think Christian Campbell is an everyday outfielder at that point with the logjam that we have. So a lot of pressure on Abreu, and obviously some points down in the Christian Campbell camp.
So the Red Sox ranked 15th in 2025 overall in home runs. After the All-Star break, they ranked 27th. Only the Reds, Pirates, and Cardinals hit fewer home runs than the Boston Red Sox.
Somehow I'm not surprised, to be honest. You know, you trade Rafael Devers and you hit less home runs.
Bregman came back and wasn't healthy. I don't really know where to go with it, but we're going to have a platoon dynasty. We're going to have so many different lineup combinations. And I wonder if we're even going to hit the fewest home runs in the American League East.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely, I would venture to guess it's possible because we have the least intimidating lineup. Because even the Rays, who I would say, like, maybe overall their lineup doesn't scare me. I think that maybe the Sox have a better, you know, batting average and getting on base percentage. But, I mean, they have guys that I'm more scared of as far as taking the ball out of the park.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We're going to be contending with the Rays for that bottom spot, no doubt.
I mean, yeah. The offseason is as simple as this. You know, again, I live in New York, so, and you know, Nick, I'm sure you hear this too, is every Yankee fan is, oh, we're running it back. Well, yeah, you're running it back, but you're, you know, adding one of the best pitchers in baseball, you know, minus when you actually get to the playoffs. But still, you got to get there. And so overall, on paper, you're a better team. The Sox have arguably gotten worse. And even if we're marginally better defensively, it's not even remotely arguable that this offense is worse. And why did we go home last year? It wasn't because of the pitching. It's because we couldn't score runs. And you made that team worse at scoring runs. And the Yankees just got better at preventing runs. Simple as that, guys. If we play a team like the Yankees, we're better in the playoffs. We're going home.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can talk about Moneyball and analytics and mathematics and baseball, but at the end of the day, when they wrote up on the whiteboard the equation, and it's just runs scored and runs against, man, and that's how you figure out how many games you should win. It's very true. You score more runs, you're probably going to win more games. And we are likely going to score less runs than last year. I don't think that that's a bold prediction necessarily. We would need, like we said, a lot of guys to take huge steps forward, which some of them are capable of, no doubt. All of them are capable, of course. I think some of them will. Some of them maybe won't. You know, and you wind up in this awkward position where your pitching staff is keeping you in this, where that rotation goes out there and can shut a team down. And then you're screaming at your television for nine innings saying, why can't we just score three runs? What is going on? And it's going to be one of those things. You know, this team is going to need some kind of organizational philosophy that can match the talent. Because last year and for years, I mean, how often have we been complaining about the hitting coaching going on? Just guys' basic approach, you know, in situational baseball. We need to become very good at that, because otherwise we don't have the dudes who are going to, you know, reset the game for you. We don't have a lot of guys capable of going out there and turning a three-run deficit into a one-run surplus. It's frightening. It is, because you need Abreu to be a 30 home run guy. Maybe he will be, maybe he won't be. Anthony maybe will hit 25. You know, I'm not confident he'll hit 30. I actually think his discipline is too good to hit 30. You know, usually when guys walk that much, they sacrifice some power. So who else do we have? You know, like you said, first base, you should get 20 to 25. Hopefully shortstop, you should get 20 to 25. Maybe at catcher, Narvaez, maybe you can get 20, but it just doesn't quite add up to where we need it to be next to teams like, God forbid, the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Blue Jays or, you know, the Orioles. Getting a guy like Pete Alonso, that's a big pickup, and that was exactly what we were eyeing for a reason, because you don't have too many game changers quite like that in terms of power on the market. And we kind of let one slip through our fingers a bit, and we'll see how much that comes back to bite us if we even make it to the postseason.
You know, I'm just looking. I'm like, how dynamic can we be? And Durbin had 22 doubles last year, not off the chart, play for an everyday guy. Kiner Falefa across a couple of teams had 19 doubles. He had IKF had 15 stolen bases, so that's not insignificant. I'm trying to see what Durbin had here. Well, he had 18, I guess, so that's something. But I don't see how it's going to happen, unfortunately. You got a great starting rotation, and that's about it.
What's nice with Durbin, I'd like to throw out, just looking at like his month by month stats, his rolling average, stuff like that. He really only had one bad month last year. He was an above average hitter for most of the season, which is nice to see. And one thing that I would like to spotlight too, which, you know, it's not always a great metric, but you can sometimes gauge a return just based off of how the opposing fan base feels about it. A lot of Brewers fans are sorry to see this kid go. So if that says anything, you know, it's something to be considered.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much to add, but I'm just, you know, we're about to see, as these guys are reporting this week, you know, how many beat writers and content creators are going to be like, oh, there's something special brewing here with this team. And I'm like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah,
they say that every year. 2024, Alex Cora said he knew he couldn't just be full of shit. So he's like, well, you know, if there were rankings for vibes, we'd be up there. that's all he had. So get ready for a lot of that. You know, it's going to be the platoon dynasty even more so than previous years. And you don't win championships like that. No team has ever won a championship like that. Good teams win championships. Balanced teams win championships because they hit home runs. They rip doubles. They sprinkle some triples out. And we just don't have it. It was a very erratic build to this year's team, where we're not going to be developing guys like Campbell and Meyer, I don't think. And the other thing too, you're coming up on a strike year. So not only are you not going to maximize this year for their development, everyone's going to be sitting around next year not doing anything. And then what's 2020 8 going to look like? That's just, Craig Breslow has just been just a massive failure to me. Like, I never at any point this winter was I like, he knows what he's doing. There's a plan. There's a plan, and we're not seeing it yet. And we didn't see it.
Yeah, it almost seems like Craig Breslow's plan is to make us a more dynamic Cleveland Guardians. I mean, because the truth is, they have more power. I mean, we don't have a Jose Ramirez that's going to hit 30-plus home runs. But, I mean, the rest of the lineup is very reminiscent. I mean, but that's a team that, like we said, every year, you know, feasts on bad teams. We also don't have the benefit of being in that division, although the Tigers have been good as of late. But they get to the playoffs, they face the Yankees, and they go home. And it's like, that's what the new life of a Boston Red Sox, we have to hope. You know, our ceiling is basically, let's get to the wild card and then get our ass kicked.
It's like, you know, I've used this analogy before, but, you know, you're at about the second luxury tax threshold, and your lineup isn't going to give you that type of value. It's like
a great point, Terry. I mean, we're paying 3 times as much as the Cleveland Guardians for half the output. I'm sorry, I take it back.
Yeah, so my analogy was like, you just paid triple for your Chevy Malibu. That's what you did.
I'm just spit my tea all over my computer.
Breslow's walking around talking like it's a, you know, a Mustang GT with all the loaded options, and you just got fleeced bad for like a Malibu. That's what this team is.
Yeah, and it's painted lime green at this point too. You know, it really is one of those, like, if we are going to be a serious team, and I'm sorry to say this, you know, I don't want to have, you know, there's a fine line between pessimism and realism, but there's also a fine line between optimism and delusion, I think, at some points. When it comes to this team, I am going to absolutely love watching this pitching staff. I'm going to absolutely love watching certain players on offense. But overall, you really, if you want a playoff run, if you expect World Series championships, you would have to have this pitching staff just have an immaculate postseason. You're talking, you know, Crochet and Suarez and Gray going out there and just shutting teams down for 6 or 7 innings, you know, holding them to 1 run, and then the bullpen just following suit, you know, because I don't see us winning a game where, like, one of our aces gives up 5 runs. If you've got a bad start like that, you're kind of hoping for a rainout.
Yeah. I'll leave it with this to piggyback on Terry's analogy. We're like the people that went to Enterprise, rented the V6 Mustang, went to a drag race, got our butts kicked, and was like, we need a V8, but then left the dealership with a 4-cylinder.
Yeah, I don't know. This we're just along for the ride at this point.
Yeah, we'll see if the front office has anything else up their sleeves. I mean, if we do reach opening day with Duran and Rafaela and Yoshida all on the roster, then I mean, I think a lot of people are going to lose some bets that they had made a year prior, you know, at midseason last year. I think a lot of people predicted that at least one of those guys would be gone come opening day. We'll see what happens. Overall, in a vacuum, I give this trade a thumbs up. Not quite 2 thumbs up, but I think, you know, it's all right. But the greater picture leaves something to be desired. So we'll see. Maybe there's another trade cooking up. At the very least, we can say we are no longer over that second threshold. That was a concern of mine, where teams suddenly knew, the Sox have to move someone, and suddenly your leverage goes down, you know? So fingers crossed that this team can outperform some expectations and maybe surprise us, but I'm not super optimistic, especially about the latter half of that statement. I've been Nick, joined by Terry and Chris. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you so much, everyone, for chatting with us tonight, for watching us tonight. Very active chat tonight, especially on YouTube. Make sure to follow us on the various platforms. We do read all the comments, even if we don't directly respond to them. So we do appreciate it. We've been the Bastards of Boston. Let's go Red Sox, and let's hope that this team can pull out some major tricks. Take care, everyone.